Greetings, salutations, and welcome to the Plain Stalkers podcast, the show by casuals for casuals. I am your host, Will Benson, joined as always by my amazingly overly sick co-host, but, you know, not in the head, just in the cold way, Aramis Perez. Aramis Perez, how are you tonight, sir?
Both of those statements are true, questionable, and or something. I don't know. I'm congested.
Yeah, I'm still pretty congested. You're very likely to hear tonight. We were trying to mute as much as possible, but we reserve the right to go Tasmanian devil on the rest of you. Hashtag not associated with Warner Brothers at all. All right. So, but with that, we should probably just get right into it. And in the fairness of usually I untap a beer at this point, I'm not because I'm sick. So I'm having a Coke Zero and it's a full Coke Zero. There's no Jack this week, but you know.
You'd be like untapping a NyQuil at this
and
point.
At least I didn't mention that you beat me in fantasy football this week. So,
again, didn't really pay super attention I was at the roster.
You know what you do need to pay, though, is your damn league dues. Okay. I want my money. I'm going to send somebody out to your house.
Have I seen you yet? I know.
All right. So tonight, untap, upkeep, and draw. This is basically the part of the show where anything can happen. We usually tell you guys what's coming up. And tonight, we've got a pretty good show. Who knows how long it's going to be? Because, you know, spoilers will take up quite a bit. But there wasn't a ton of news. It's definitely getting quieter prior to pre-release, obviously. But tonight,
calm before the storm.
Yes. Quiet as far as news outside of previews. And then we have a ton. We're going to go through as many as we can. Where it doesn't become boring anyway. But we're going to talk about a lot of Throne of Eldraine spoilers. And then we are actually going to mention a little bit. We do have a new Hall of Famer. He was voted in this week. So we'll go through that. Our combat, if we have time, we're going to reserve the right to skip it if need be. But we want to kind of go over the best mythic in Throne of Eldraine for standard. So we're going to kind of go over that. If we're having a good conversation on spoilers and we start running low on time, we will. Our second main, we want to talk about Arena, obviously, and the format changes and Wizards kind of walked things back. And we even have an email dealing with Commander. And I mean, you know what, guys, I know we're a show for standard, but don't start an email with Commander with like, hey, I know it's not standard. It's fine. We play all formats. We just focus on standard here. I'd be glad to talk about it. And the question is actually really good and actually gave me some ideas for my deck. So I was very happy. But with that, let's go ahead and get right into
main phase.
The main of the phase. Okay. Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. Tonight we are going to talk over some Throne of Eldraine spoilers. We've got a lot to get to. I'm going to try to do a little bit like we've been doing. So, you know, obviously we'll try to switch in and show you cards we go through, but, you know, most of the set, what would you say about 80% of the set now has been spoiled, right? We got 325 close to 325, a 325 of what? 400?
Something like that. Okay. Yeah. It's like about 200 cards of the main set have been spoiled. Right. And the rest of them are like, you know, like the brawl showcase version, like little showcase versions or the full arts or things like that. Right. So they count those as supplements.
Do they really? Interesting. So they have different card numbers.
Yeah, they do. The full art version of Questing Beast is number 372.
Oh shit. Or no kidding. Yeah. Beep. Yeah. Sorry. But wow. Geez. Oh geez, Rick. Yeah, that's good then. Oh, I didn't know that. So that's one of the reasons the number is so high, which is new, right?
Because it is new. It's new. And it's also, if you think about it, kind of another cash grab, because it's like, well, if you want to complete the whole set, you got to buy those collector boosters.
Ooh, what does that mean for MTGO?
I'm sure that they'll just have the regular versions and like maybe have the alternate arts be like prizes.
Well, no, I mean, the MTGO, like you get the full set in MTGO.
Oh, redemptions?
Yeah.
Well, if your MTGO collection is just the basic cards, they'll redeem the basic cards.
Okay, because that
that
would suck holy balls.
Yeah, I don't think they would sit back and just be like, yeah, we're gonna give you all these other ones, but sorry, you didn't collect all of these, so you don't get it.
Yeah. Oh wow, that would I'd be like, you freaking rat bastards. Oh, that's amazing though. So yeah. Like, well, we might as well just, you know, hop right into it.
Yeah, there's some good stuff.
There's a ton of good stuff. So let's, first of all, I'm going to go ahead and switch it over to our lovely, we're using MTG Nexus tonight, and I'm going to throw it on the screen here for us, obviously, and it's going to be pretty much solo, so you don't have to look at our funny faces anymore. But you know, we are using MTG Nexus hashtag. They did not sponsor this and did not give us permission, but since they're printing wizard stuff, I doubt they have permission. They might have, I don't know. I don't care. Please don't sue. So excuse me. So let's go ahead. What do you want to start with, brother?
I mean, there's so much. I mean, like since the last time we were on, they probably previewed about 150 cards.
Right.
Let's see. Take a random stab here. Well, they made a card for the world champion for last year for Javier Dominguez.
Oh, what is it? Set.
It is Fervent Champion.
Well, let's.
It is a 1/1 for one red. It is a human knight. It's a rare. He has first strike and haste. Whenever Fervent Champion attacks, another target attacking knight you control gets +1/+0 till end of turn. And equip abilities you activate that target Fervent Champion cost 3 less to activate.
Wow.
So you can put all your equipment on him pretty much for free. And if I remember correctly, isn't the equip cost on Embercleave 3?
Interesting question.
Yes, it is. So you can equip Embercleave to him for free.
Well, way to go there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I kind of like that they put Javier on there. And then I had an interesting thought. I'm like, okay, so are they basically saying we're never going to reprint this, or when we reprint it, we're not going to put you on there?
Well, I mean, they reprinted Meddling Mage with different art, so
yeah, I would think they're going to be like, no,
yeah. So we'll see.
One of my personal faves that I'm kind of excited about is the Magic Mirror.
Yes.
This spell costs one. It's pretty expensive, but again, it's one of those for what you have, you get less of. It's 3 blue and 6 colorless. It costs 1 less for each instant and sorcery in your graveyard. So, yeah, is it Phoenix? May not be dead in standard. You have no maximum hand size, and at the beginning of your upkeep, put a knowledge counter on the Magic Mirror. Then draw a card for each knowledge counter on the Magic Mirror. By the way, that is separate from draw. So in the second turn you have this out where you put a counter on it, you're drawing 2 before your draw step.
Well, you draw 1 because there's no, it doesn't come with any
no, but what I'm saying, I should say, like when you have 2 on it, you're drawing 2 before your draw step. Yeah. 3 is 3 before your draw step. That's pretty great, actually, on a lot of levels. I'm kind of really excited for that because it's also one thing I've noticed in this set. Mill might become a thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of mill, either for, you know, defeating your opponent through that means or fueling your own strategies.
Well, that's just it with the Jace Sorcerer, with the Jace Planeswalker. And the fact that if you leave this sit out there and I'm drawing 5, 6, 7 cards pre-draw, you know, I should be able to mill through my deck rather quickly.
Yes.
Especially as you're putting, you know, or say, okay, I cast this, you know, the first time. And so you get rid of it, but maybe I've milled 2 or 3 cards using other means. Well, I might have more instants and sorceries. I could bring it back out for 3 more.
Right.
So it's a very interesting, it's going to be interesting to see if something like that happens. But there's a lot of like self-mill or things that kind of let you draw a poopy ton of cards. Mm-hmm. What do you think? What's next for you?
Well, that artifact you talked about, the Magic Mirror, is actually part of a cycle of mythic, rare, colored artifacts.
Right.
The red one was Embercleave.
Right.
The white one was Circle of Loyalty. And the black one is the one that I'm going to talk about next. You remember God Pharaoh's Gift?
I love God Pharaoh's Gift. I play it in most of my commander decks.
So they didn't reprint God Pharaoh's Gift because that would be strange. But they printed a new artifact that really could be quite good in the right deck. It sort of basically says you're going to play Reanimator, so try to find a way to get Dracoseth in your graveyard. So it's called the Cauldron of Eternity. It's a legendary artifact, mythic, for 10 colorless and 2 black. So this sucker costs 12.
Right. Basic.
But this spell costs 2 less to cast for each creature card in your graveyard. Self-mill. You know, Gorging Vulture, things of that nature. Whenever a creature you control dies, put it on the bottom of its owner's library. Okay. Pay 2 and a black, tap, and pay 2 life. Return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery. So, I mean, every turn you get to get a big stupid fatty out of your graveyard. And hey, if it's Dracuseth.
Dracuseth is still somewhat broken on quite a few levels. And I think a lot of what we're going to see, you know, is going to have, if you have a red deck, it's going to be a thing. He's going to be in there.
I mean, he's expensive. He is 7 mana. So the best way to do it would be to find a way to cheat him into play. And the Cauldron can do that for you.
Right. Well, that or, you know, if you're playing Gruul, then, you know, but then again, and which would help, speaking of Gruul, Iron Craig Pyromancer. Or actually, this is actually better. I'm sorry. Is it? Picture this in an Is It deck.
Yes.
Whenever you draw your second card each turn, Iron Craig Pyromancer deals 3 damage to any target. And oh, by the way, folks, Niv-Mizzet is not rotating.
No, sir.
So let me get this straight. Every time I draw a card after my first in a turn, and say I have Niv-Mizzet and Iron Craig out, that's 4 every time?
No.
That's 4.
It only works in the second card you draw for your
turn. That's what I mean. Every time, you know, usually if you have Niv-Mizzet out, and if it survives to untap, things get real. So
So anytime you draw 2 cards in a turn, that second card is going to trigger the Pyromancer.
Right. Well, Niv-Mizzet makes you draw a card anytime an instant or a sorcery is played. If you're on somebody else's turn and Niv-Mizzet is out and they play 2 instants or sorceries. So,
well, you can respond to their instant with a counterspell and then lightning bolt them.
Yeah. Well, it's not just that. If you think about it, though, even if you're tapped out, this actually is the Niv-Mizzet protector card. Because if you have this out turn 3, you get Niv-Mizzet out turn 4. Okay, to get Niv-Mizzet off the field in most burn, it's going to require usually 2 cards unless they've got a Banefire or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So say they shock or lightning. Well, it's lightning strike's not in.
Lightning strikes rotating. No, yeah, lightning strikes rotating out.
Oh God, we're gonna have to talk about the 3 job because I mean, but say they do lava coil for 4. You still need one more. Okay, so 4, you don't do anything. However, you're drawing a card off Niv-Mizzet. A damage is being done to them. They're gonna have to play a second spell. Now they have to really think about: is it worth 3 life? Because at that point, you're gonna draw another card off Niv, and hit them for not only the for Niv-Mizzet's one. But now you're going to hit them for 3 off of this. And if you have one of the other cards, which I'm sure we'll talk about, that says, hey, you know, and I guess I could, you know what, I'm going to go off the res here. And where is he?
While you're searching for that card, keep in mind that the Iron Craig Pyromancer is a 0/4 for 3.
Oh, yeah, I should say that.
And it's not legendary.
No. But
so you can have 2 or 3 of these bad boys on the table at the same time.
Say you get Torben Thane of Redfell out. He is a red. If a red source you control, which both Niv and this other lady are, would deal damage to opponent or a permanent an opponent controls, it deals that much +2 instead. Ouch.
And he's very reasonable. He's 1/3 red for a 2/4, but with his ability, he's essentially a 4/4.
Well, 1/3 red also means, all right, if you're getting Niv-Mizzet out, you have 3 red. So to curve into this, if you think about it, if you get that other card out on turn 2 or on turn 3, this out on turn 4 and Niv out on 6, things get real very, very fast. I don't know that anybody be able to do it. It seems a little too combo-y for red, but if you can somehow make it work and then throw Chandra's Spitfire in there for fun.
Yeah, this is like, you know, this is magical Christmas land stuff, but hey, this is a new set. This is what we get to talk about. Post-rotation. It's the Wild West as far as decks are concerned.
I mean, things are just going to be, wow. Yeah.
Mono green
might be a thing.
Green got tons and tons of toys.
Yeah. Well, they're taking away, you know, they're taking away quite a few of the toys.
They are, but they're replacing really good stuff.
Yeah. Well, I still haven't seen a Carny T yet.
Yeah, there's a Carny T.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, there's a Carny T. Where is he? Hold on. Let me search for him. He was previewed about a week ago.
Okay.
I think after we went off the air.
And not Questing Beast, is it?
It's not Questing Beast. It's his big brother.
I love that thing, by the way. That card is already up to like $22.
Yeah, Questing Beast's big brother is Feasting Troll King.
I shall find him. Luckily, everything's in alphabetical order here.
He is a 7/6 Vigilance Trample for 2/4 green.
Wow.
So that's 6 mana. When Feasting Troll King enters the battlefield, if you cast it from your hand, create 3 food tokens, sacrifice 3 foods, return Feasting Troll King from your graveyard to the battlefield, activate this ability only during your turn.
Okay.
Pretty sick. It got a great 2-drop in Wildborn Preserver. That is a 2/2 for 1 and a green. It's an elf archer. Has flash and reach. Whenever another non-human creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay X. When you do, put X +1/+1 counters on Wildborn Preserver. I mean, are you noticing a theme here?
Yes.
And then you top it all off with the mythic artifact from the cycle. The where is it up here?
He's up towards the top.
Yeah, the Great Henge. The Great Hedge?
Yeah, it's Stonehenge.
Yeah, it's Stonehenge. The Great Henge. Legendary artifact, 7/2 green, so 9 mana. But this spell costs X less to cast, where X is the greatest power among creatures you control. Tap, add 2 green, you gain 2 life. Whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on it and draw a card. I mean, this thing is... got so much value just baked right into it.
It really does. I mean, granted, it's 9, but again, it costs X. Where if you can get out a big bad, first of all, you can ramp into anything. But
people are already talking about this. Basically, it's turn 1, Arboreal Grazer.
Yes.
Drop a swamp. Turn 2, Rotting Regisaur.
Oh.
Turn 3, land this.
That's not bad.
So there you go.
Wow. Get this out on turn 3 and the game changes.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a mana rock that adds 2 mana already. So you're getting your mana, no pun intended, you're getting your mana's worth. You're getting life every time you activate it. And then whenever you cast a creature, it gets a little bit bigger and it replaces itself. I mean, come on.
Yeah. And I mean, there's so many really great things about this set so far. Where's that land we were talking about before the show? What's the
there name? Is yes.
Is it
there
Fabled is a Passage?
Fetch land.
No,
it is Fabled Passage. Yeah. There is a fetch land in this set, kind of, sort of,
it's,
like.
It, and we could talk about that because it's kind of like they're trying to. I think they're getting us prepared. I have a feeling with Zendikar, we may get.
Yeah, we've both been talking about the fact that we're thinking that fetch lands are making their return with Zendikar when we go back there.
God, I hope so.
So do I.
Learn your lesson, people.
Yeah. So Fabled Passage is a rare land. And it's tap, sacrifice Fabled Passage, search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. It's Evolving Wilds.
Right.
But then if you control 4 or more lands, untap that land. So if you're on turn 4 or later when you crack this, the land comes in untapped.
Right.
So at that point, it's a Prismatic Vista without having to pay a life.
And it doesn't have... And I mean, yeah, it only grabs a basic, so I get that, but...
That's fine.
It's still... Yeah, it's good enough.
You most know. Multicolored decks are going to probably want to play a couple copies of this at least, because it fixes your mana, thins your deck, it does all the things a fetch land is designed to do. Okay, the land comes into play tapped, but there's ways around that. Obviously, if you do it a little bit later in the game, it comes in untapped. So you're not really looking for this. This really isn't so much a ramp land as it is just a fixing land.
Question.
Yes.
Is WotC... Are they... trolling, baiting Disney somehow? Take a look at these lands on the screen. The green one right here, that is Pride Rock from the Lion King. There is absolutely no way that is not Pride Rock. And then the next one down, that is a Star Destroyer.
So I can't speak about the black one, but the green one they mentioned, they talked about it. Castle Garenbrig. Mm-hmm. It was built by the giants before the humans came to power in Eldraine. And that's basically a gigantic sundial.
Okay.
That's why it looks like that.
It's Pride Rock.
When I first initially saw it, I'm like, Pride Rock. That's cool.
And I'm sorry, you haven't seen Star Wars?
I have. I'm just saying I can't speak to that because I'm not sure, obviously, what their intent was.
But tell me that doesn't... The first time I saw it, I'm like, that's a Star Destroyer.
Yeah.
That is a Star Destroyer. I'm like,
the perspective, the way that it looks. Yeah, I can see that.
Like... What the? And this kind of looks like the castle from Disney, and this kind of looks like Mustafar, and this kind of looks like the place where they had in Rogue One. I'm like, guys, listen. Yes, you're using public domain fairy tales. Sure.
Well, yeah, and to the white one. What was the name of that in the Lord of the Rings movie? That castle.
Oh yeah, that's what that looks like. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks just like that.
It's like, seriously, they're like,
did they catch it? Did they catch it?
Artistic license. It's not copying. Hey, but you know what? They could take my money.
Oh, I'm still gonna. Yeah, I'm still gonna.
They could take my money.
So, Ginger Brute, because I'm scrolling up here, and this came out. And I mean, I'm sorry, it's just kind of funny.
I love Ginger Brute.
It's a one artifact. It's a little 1/1 plinker, but it has haste. And it can't be blocked by this turn except by creatures with haste to pay,
yeah, to pay one, to one mana. Right?
Yeah. If you pay two and tap it, sacrifice Ginger Brute, you gain 3 life. This because literally, it's a food. Huh? Yeah.
It's a food.
This literally looks like, honestly, this is their answer to shoot. What's that little pirate that's going away? Oh, God, in red.
Oh, Firebrand?
Yeah, Fanatical Firebrand.
I was thinking more Bomat Courier.
He is kind of Bomat-ish because he's an artifact. But the fact that he's haste and, you know, to be able, if you're putting him out turn two to say, because that's the hardest part with him, is to say, hey, I'm going to attack 1/1, but you've got a 2/1. To be able to say, yeah, you can't block me this turn, it's automatically value. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it doesn't do the sacrifice, you know, do one damage to anything you want. But so... are we going to get, do you think in the next set, because I'm now looking here at the multicolors, we're going to get, do you think we're going to get the, what the heck's the mechanic we used to have that is, shoot.
Like domain?
No, where, you know, it's a word. Basically, the more you have, the better.
Oh, devotion?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. They have to be bringing that back with all the pips.
Like, look at this. This is, there are 6 on the screen right now, and if you're not watching this on our live feed, feel free to go to our website and grab it, or Facebook page and grab it. But we've got 6, and we'll just, you know, read them out. There are 6 multicolor. These are enemy, right?
No. Well,
those are allies.
Arcanist Isle is allied, but Locked Dragon and Fireborn Knight are enemy colors.
Okay, so it's. I was wondering if they were doing it like they did the lands. Well, no, Arcanist. Let's talk about these 6. Pair. What's that?
There's one for each pair.
Yeah. Well, there's only 6, right? Or is there?
Yeah, well, they haven't previewed them all yet. So
that's true. Oh, wait, no, there's 10. You're right.
So there'll be 10.
Or there's 8, so there'll be 10. 8
for now, but there will be 10.
Yeah, there has to be. So, yeah, there has to be then. There's a bunch of, you know, you can play a blue or white. You can play a blue or white, black or blue, red or black.
Yeah, they're all hybrids.
Right. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. I'm still on a little bit of cough medicine. So
it's hybrid.
So this is kind of, these are kind of great. I mean, we can go over these if you want. They're all uncommon, so they're kind of somewhat helpful, somewhat, you know, they're definitely gonna be support cards, but it just makes me think we're gonna see devotion coming probably with Theros, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, just all, you look at all the number of colored pips, all the triple and sometimes quadruple pips,
yeah,
in these spells. I mean, Gadwick the Wizened, 3/3 legendary human wizard for X and 3 blue. When it enters the battlefield, draw X cards. And whenever you cast a blue spell, tap target non-land permanent and opponent controls.
Yeah.
Yum. Yeah.
You're not kidding. It's there's definitely, I think there's one in every one. There's like a 3-pip or 4-pip.
Yeah, every color has the triple colored legendary leader of their realm. Because Torbrand, the one you mentioned, was the one for red. That one's the one for blue. Linden, the Steadfast Queen, is the one for white. She's a 3/3 for 3 white with vigilance. And whenever a white creature you control attacks, you gain a life.
Right.
The black one is...
would the green one be Yorvo, just for 3 green?
Yes.
Okay.
Yorvo's the green one. He's good, too.
Oh, he's ridiculous. Put him up. I've got him on the screen here. He enters the battlefield with 4/1/1 counters. Again, 3 green. Whenever another green creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a 1/1 counter on him. And if that creature's power is greater than Yorvo's power, put another 1/1 counter on him.
Yep.
Ow.
Well, I mean, granted, that's going to be hard for him to get that much, you know, much bigger than a 6/6, but still, for right. 3 mana.
Yeah.
The black one is Ayara, First of Lochtwain. She's a 2/3 for 3 black. She's an elf noble. Whenever Ayara, First of Lochtwain, or another black creature enters the battlefield under your control, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life, and you can tap, sacrifice another black creature to draw a card.
I like it a lot.
Another one that I like, there's 2 more that I like actually for control.
Yeah.
Stolen by the Fae. It's a sorcery for X and 2 blue.
So it's in blue. Hold on.
Return target creature with converted mana cost X to its owner's hand. You create X11 blue fairy creature tokens with flying.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. And then there's a new counter spell. You know, provided that Teferi isn't as oppressive as we all know he will be, called Drown in the Lock.
I just saw it. Hold on. It's down below a little bit.
Yeah, that one is an instant for a blue and a black. You choose one. Counter target spell with converted mana cost less than or equal to the number of cards in its controller's graveyard. Or destroy target creature with converted mana cost less than or equal to the number of cards in its controller's graveyard. So, you know, early in the game, Force Spike or something like, or you know, something cheap like that. But later in the game, it's straight up removal or straight up counterspell for two, which, you know, they don't normally print.
Exactly. I'm a big fan of Outlaw's Merriment. I think this is going to see play a lot in, like, especially Feather. And obviously we're going back to humans. I mean, they're bringing humans out. Like, we should have seen it in 2020.
Humans against non-humans.
Yeah. We should have seen it in Core 2020. It was,
yeah.
There was, you know, and there were hints of it. Like we said, it's like why we can see hints of Devotion coming back is things we're seeing now. But Outlaw's Merriment is a one red, two white, and one colorless, so four mana cost. And it says, it's an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, choose one at random. Create a red and white creature token with those characteristics. So it can either be a 3-1 human warrior with trample and haste, a 2-1 human cleric with lifelink and haste, a 1-2 human rogue with haste, and when this creature enters the battlefield, it deals one damage to any target. And I think they're working on something for rogues. There isn't much in this set, but I think there's more. Because there's a card that really, I gotta find it, that works with the rogue mechanic. It's like every time a rogue comes in, crazy fun stuff happens. Hold on a second, I'll find it here.
Well, you're looking for that. There's another one that I like too.
Oh, it's Robber of the Rich. So oh, Robin Hood, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, is that the one? Yeah. So Reach and Haste. Whenever Robber of the Rich attacks, if defending player has more cards in hand than you, exile the top card of their library. Then second, during any turn you attacked with a rogue, you may cast that card and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast that spell. Freaking ow.
Yeah, that's got some interesting potential. I like it.
And I mean, there's only like 9 rogue cards in this set, actually 6. So they're not there yet. This right here, I think we're going to see in Theros, or maybe even probably this will be in the big set where they go to the giant land. Cause then a rogue is like, I have to be sneaky and stealthy. Cause look at the size of these guys.
Right.
I could see that from a story perspective, but go on. What do you got?
We're going to go to Flavortown a little bit.
Okay.
Do you remember the Billy Goats Gruff?
I remember the Billy Goats Gruff.
The troll is in the set.
Yes.
And so are the goats. So it is Clackbridge Troll. It's kind of doing a Hogak impression. It's an 8/8 trample haste for 5, 3/2 black.
They're probably determined to make that card work.
First of all, black always gets these big, huge creatures
and never gets drawback.
And never mind trample. So this is an 8/8 trample haste for 5 mana, coming on the heels of a 7/6 for 3. So this used to be green's territory. Anyway, black is dipping into that.
Yeah.
When Clackbridge Troll enters the battlefield, target opponent creates 3/0/1 white goat creature tokens. So there's the 3 billy goats.
Which is great because I play Plains Chase a lot. We love goat land.
Yep. So here's the quote-unquote drawback. At the beginning of combat on your turn, any opponent may sacrifice a creature. If a player does, you tap Clackbridge Troll, you gain 3 life, and you draw a card.
Oh, shite.
I don't see the drawback.
No, there's no drawback.
I really don't see the drawback. I mean,
and it's a rare. It's not even a mythic. This will see play.
Yeah.
This will
see play. So like, if you play this later on, I mean, okay, say you have like 7 mana available, and for whatever reason, they don't have any creatures on the board. You play a Clackbridge. Before you go to combat, you cast Legion's End on their goats.
Yep.
The goats are dead. You swing in for 8.
Yep. If they let you.
Well, they don't have any creatures left. If that was all they had were goats.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's some interesting ways. I mean, I think that'll see God, where? Well, yeah, but where does it? I mean, this is probably going to be something out of a new standard. I don't know where it would fit. It's not going to fit in Esper.
It's so damn big. I mean, it's for what you're
probably
paying.
Grixis. I could see it going in Grixis.
You could see it in Golgari if they want to get abuse the Great Henge as well.
Ooh,
because it's cheap and it's gigantic.
That's true. We might see Golgari come back, and I mean, we still have a Vraska out there. We'll still have.
Yeah. And the drawback's not, again, like, it's not much of a drawback. I mean, that and the Regisaur, the drawbacks that they have in these cards, nah, they're negligible. I mean, you can get around these.
This could actually, this could make Sultai too, because with this Hydroid Krasis plus the Hedge, it's an interesting idea. Like, that'll be probably some talk next week is, you know, not once we have the full set of, like, what decks do we think, you know, have a shot?
Well, and plus two, you know, it's a black card, which means you're going to have removal. So they're going to have a limited choice as to what cards they want to sacrifice. So you're going to get in with your big fat troll.
Right.
You know, and if you're, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's just, I have a feeling this will see play. I would be a little shocked if it didn't see at least some fringe play because it's just so damn big for its cost.
Right. I think you're going to see quite a bit of, you know, that it's a five mana cost to get you an, you know, a freaking monster, you know, and then it either becomes a life gain for you or just nosing damage. Well, trample.
Life gain and card advantage. If you can't attack with it, you're gaining through life and drawing a card.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll pay that price. Black love to be able to gain to draw cards.
Did we show the card last week, which is like, if you have this in your hand at opening, what is it? Once Upon a Time, is it?
Oh, the one where you can cast for free if it's the first spell.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about Once Upon a Time last week.
Or whatever it was called, yeah.
Once Upon a Time. That's going to be a good one.
By the way, we should say this because it's very important because we did wonder about it. Our boy's back. We did get Opt. Yes. I know people were worried about that. I was one of them. I was like, oh God, if Opt goes out, what do we do?
I am kind of happy that it's like so far there's only been really three reprints that I know of, and one of them was kind of a surprise.
Which was
Righteousness.
Oh, really?
They reprinted Righteousness. Now, for those of you who didn't play Magic way back in the day, when people first, you know, when they were first evaluating cards, they thought this card was awesome. Then they realized, you know, it's not super great, but it's a combat trick. Instant for one and a white, target blocking creature gets +7/+7 until end of turn.
That's kind of great, actually.
It's simple, but it's like, I remember when I first saw this card, I'm like, +7/+7 for one mana. Who cares if it's blocking? This is awesome. Okay, granted, it's not actually that good of a card, but you're going to win combat with that creature. 9 times out of 10, unless it, like, for some reason it has death touch or something.
So I'm looking here. It's one of the things we could talk about with regards to that as well is what do we like? It seems like they have nerfed direct burn a little bit. I mean, there's other ways to, when I say direct burn, I mean by an instant. There are creatures that do it. There are creatures that'll burn you out, like Ironclad Pyromancer and things like that. But really, there is no replacement for Lightning Strike yet.
Stomp is the closest thing. A Bone Crusher Giant.
Again, it's a creature though. When I say,
yeah, but this the sorcerer the adventure part of it's a spell.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm looking red. Yeah,
because I'm looking here right now, and there are I put in 3 damage. The closest you get is Scorching Dragonfire for 1 colorless and a red, and it deals 3 damage only to a creature or planeswalker, but it will exile them.
Yeah.
Slaying Fire costs 3, and that's kind of Lightning Bolt, especially if you spend 3 red mana. So in mono red, Slaying Fire will be a card. That'll be a great card.
Yeah.
It'll see a lot of play in mono red. I don't know that you'll see it play in Gruul or other colors. Maybe you will, because it's still a Lightning Bolt. It just costs 1 more.
Yeah.
Which, if you're playing a green and red deck, then you don't really care because odds are good you've ramped into it anyway. But that is something to think about. Now, it's, again, we're not through all the spoilers yet.
Right.
It may, usually, isn't there always like one reprint on like the last day? Like, I think Shock was the last day of Core 20.
Well, yeah, they're previewing most of the new stuff first.
Right.
So the reprints will be just like sort of when they do their dump of all the commons and uncommons. But I think, excuse me, I think Bone Crusher Giant is going to be the one that probably sees the most play.
Give me Lightning Bolt. Forget this Lightning Strike shit. Give me Bolt. I want a Bolt. Put Bolt in standard.
Original Lightning Bolt would be nice. I mean, it changes the complexion of what creatures are good. So I can kind of understand where they're coming from with that, because you want people to be able to play their cards that they're paying for and before it rotates. But at the same time, yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
Right.
But Bone Crusher Giant is going to see all kinds of play in Mono.
Yeah, but it's still only two. It's only dealing two.
Yeah, but it's attached to a 4/3 for three.
Right. And I get, well, it's attached to a 4/3 for three that you have to recast. So you're dealing. So in essence, you get the 4/3 out. I mean, to do this the right way, you're going to do it you're going to have five mana.
Not necessarily.
You cast turn three. Yeah, you're going to want it turn three.
You stomp something on turn two. And also, there's a rider on the stomp where damage can't be prevented this turn. So,
that's true.
You know, if you were able to deal the two damage to something that they were somehow trying to prevent the damage to it, it wouldn't work. So it's a bit of a stronger shock. So that's where you get the extra mana from.
Right.
And then the 4/3 that's attached to it, you know, whenever that becomes the target of a spell, it deals two damage to the spell's controller. So if they want to kill it, they're going to have to take some more pain.
So maybe I'm just, you know, I like my mono red, and I like the fact that I like the simplicity of it. I like mono red too, from an aspect of, you know, with regards to, you know, what we do at where I work and stuff, we try to get new kids involved and stuff. It's very easy to hand a mono red deck to a new player and say, play this. This will be fine. You're going to be good. Go ahead and play this. And have them, you know, have no problem with it. Whereas something like, you know, a lot of this is going to require, you know, they have to be a little bit more complex, because mono red tends to be put foot on gas, don't take off.
Well, I think they're sort of getting away from bolting the face. So like a red cap melee.
Yeah.
That's four damage for one mana. But if you damage a non-red permanent, you have to sacrifice a land.
Oh, we had somebody, you didn't tell me somebody had said something. Ricky Race, he said, this set seems really good. Pre-ordered my first ever booster box last night. Congratulations.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, we'll both buy boxes. I haven't pre-ordered yet. I will probably pre-order tomorrow on Friday when I get paid. If I can, I got to check my, you know, good check to finances. But I'll at least be a pre-release. I'm definitely going to go. And I mean, next week's episode, we usually, this will be what, our third or fourth set we've been, because we came in at Allegiance. So we've had Allegiance, Spark, I think, 20. Yeah, so this is our fourth cycle through. And, you know, I think we like to do the week before, we're going to look and be like, okay, here's some, you know, sealed strategies for you if you're playing sealed, which is usually what pre-release weekend is. Some places do Two-Headed Giant. I know our store does. But for the most part, they tend to do, here's your pre-release pack, make a deck. So, well, I think next week that'll be what we normally do, and that usually works out pretty well. I mean, it's all BS, tends to be, because, you know, we'll be like, this is what you should play. And then we come back from pre-release, we're like, this is what we played, which is not even close to what we said you should play.
Well, and I mean, there's always that caveat where it's like, you know, it's if you open this.
Right.
So that's the big thing about sealed, is that you can open absolute garbage, and well, that's just, you know.
And I've been there. I think my War of the Spark wasn't garbage. I did okay.
You had to rebuild your deck, remember?
Yeah. So War of the Spark was a little garbagey. But let's do this. Pick one more piece, one more card we want to talk about, and then we'll go into I forget what our combat is.
Talking about the mythics.
Yeah. So you know what? Let's do this. Let's pick screw it. Let's just pick a mythic we like, and we can kind of talk about that for a minute. Let's go to
Phase.
So I will let you, sir, because you are far more versed than me, and if I let you go first, then I will have time to find one I like.
Well, all the mythics have been spoiled, so
yes, they have
15 mythics in the set. I'm pretty sure 15 was the number they were going with. So there's the three planeswalkers, there's the five artifacts, and then there's just, you know, other stuff sprinkled through, so it's not an even number. Like, white's got three mythics, blue has two, black has two, red has two, white has, green has two. Yeah, white's got three, and multicolored has four.
Right.
And it's not even, like, there's only one card that's multicolored that has black. There's only one that has white. So two of them have red, two of them have green, two of them have blue.
So what are you thinking?
As far as standard is concerned.
As far as standard, which is what we talk about.
Yeah. The one that's probably the best is probably the one that has the most words.
I had a feeling we were going to go there.
And I mean, looking at it, I mean, it's going to be the green one of the green ones, either the Great Henge or Questing Beast. And you kind of have to go with Questing Beast.
Yeah. Questing Beast is a good one. You're welcome to go to that.
It's stupid. I mean, look at all the words.
Well, all right, and again, I think we talked about this last week, but it bears repeating. It's two green and two colorless. It has, wait for it, vigilance, death touch, and haste. It cannot be blocked by creatures with power two or less.
So no chomping.
It can't. Combat damage that would be dealt by creatures you control cannot be prevented. Not just this creature, but all of your creatures.
Yeah.
And whenever Questing Beast deals combat damage to an opponent, it deals that much damage to target player that Planeswalker or that Planeswalker that player controls. So it's not only that, it's like, oh, I'm also going to hit Teferi over here. I'm hitting you for four. And yeah, I'm also going to hit Teffy for four or whatever you've got. Basically, this card seems to be, they must have sat down right after Nexus of Fate became a thing. And they were like, okay, Rootsnare is a pain in the neck. All right, so let's make it so that Rootsnare can't be done. Okay, that's good. But what about Teferi? Because Teferi is a tool for that. Well, we should make this hit both players. Oh, that'll be good. Yeah. Can't be blocked by power two or less. Well, sometimes they get these little, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. Oh, well, we can stop that. It literally looks like, hey, Nexus of Fate, screw you. Even though you've exiled, you know, rotated out, this is our gift to those who hated that deck.
I mean, it's a very good card.
I mean, yeah. It's right now sitting at $20.
Not surprised. This might end up being the, at least with the initial wave, probably the Chase Mythic, the one that everyone's gonna be like, I want to open four of these.
Right. Well, if it's in a Brawl, it's not in Brawl, is it?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Because if it was in Brawl, then, you know, it's like, I'm going to start buying Brawler packs. And I mean, obviously, I'm going to buy a Brawl pack. I mean, it's just, you know, but for me, what I really, really like, and I don't know if it's good for standard or not. I think time will tell on it. But the other card, because, I mean, we should have a different card. Kenrith. Kenrith is ridiculous. Okay, this thing, it's a five color. It's obviously going to see play in Commander and Brawl. There's no doubt in my mind this will be somebody's Commander in both Brawl and Commander. Because it's brokenly ridiculous. It is a legendary creature, obviously. Human Noble, one white, four colorless. If you pay a red, all creatures gain trample and haste till end of turn. If you play a colorless and a green, put a 1/1 counter on target creature. Two colorless and a white, target player gains five life. Three colorless and a blue, target player draws a card. Four colorless and a black, put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under its owner's control. Okay, again, maybe not in standard so much, but I still think it's going to see a lot of play because it does have a lot of value as far as if you're playing a red and white deck, if you're playing Boros, well, this gives haste and trample to everything coming in. That's helpful. If you're playing Selesnya, being able to put 1/1 counters on your tokens and things like that, worthwhile. Or even Bant, well, now Bant, it gets a little crazy. You know, because you can do that and draw a card. It has a lot of value. Now, granted, it's got a sliding scale. It gets expensive towards the higher colors and stuff like that. Where I think this is really great is Commander and Brawl because it's a politic card.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally like two and a white, target player gains five life. It doesn't say you. So if you're like, okay, you and I work together, get rid of this jerk over here who's running Sakama, even though it's a, you know what I mean? But like,
right.
we have to gang up on Atraxa over here. If you're playing Commander, we have to gang up on him. I'm going to give you five life to get you back to good. Let's get it. You know what I mean? It's a great politic card in that regard, but I also think it's really good in standard. I mean, you know, again, I like the flexibility of it. And I think with this new format that we're moving into, I think flexibility is going to be key because, again, yeah, sure, week one is going to be, you know, burn, 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 baby, burn. But, you know,
the one problem is it's going to be a little bit harder to get a hold of this card. because Kenrith is the buy a box.
Yeah, I know it is. Yeah, because Nexus of Fate was so terribly hard to get a hold of.
Well, I mean, it was that was ended up being $25. Yeah. But
well, no, it's also going to show up in collector's packs, I think, isn't it?
It'll show up in the collector's packs, but those are probably going to be $20-$25.
Right. So,
I'll
change my answer then, because we're talking like standard only.
Standard legal.
Yeah, but I mean, if I was going to change my, you know, if I was going to do anything else, then it would be Embercleave, obviously, because I love red.
Yeah,
I mean that card is stupid. Well, I'll switch it up so that we can have a good combat, because mine is really Commander Brawl based. Embercleave is a legendary artifact, 2 red, 4 colorless equipment, flash. So you cast it whenever you'd like. Granted, you better have 6 mana, or it costs 1 less to cast for each attacking creature you control, so you declare attackers and then cast it. When it enters the battlefield, attach it to target creature you control. So again, I declare attackers, I cast this, I'm going to attach it to, say, Dracumeth. And equipped creature gets 1/1, double strike and trample. Otherwise, it costs 3 to equip. That card is begging to be abused.
Yeah, I'd say it has the hardest condition to cost less than 6, because you can only really do it during combat.
Right, and you better have a lot out.
Yeah, but +1/+1 double strike and trample is pretty good.
Well, if you're putting it, all right, say you're a Gruul, or you put what's Gruul? What's red, white, and green? Is that Jund?
Red, white, and green
is
geez, it's not Jund. Naya.
Okay, so say you put this in a Naya deck where you can get some tokens out at a quicker pace.
Yeah,
it's got potential there. Naya is hurting in other ways. Don't get me wrong. I mean, looking at a lot of this, Gruul, Jund. If you're going 3-color, Gruul, Jund is going to be your babies. Maybe Grixis. There is some help in there. But I mean, Grixis will still have Nivy, or not Nivy. Grixis will still have freaking, gosh darn it, God Pharaoh there, Nicol Bolas.
Oh, Nicky B.
Yeah, Nicky B is still a thing. So, yeah, I'm gonna go with Embercleave as far as Mythic. I think that this one right now, and the fact it's only sitting at 367, I may buy 4. You know, if I don't open them in my box, I'll buy 4. Like, because I mean, this is a card I think will go up in value. It and again, standard alone, it's great. I think it's a real helpful card to kind of get you over the top. But you put it in modern, you put it in Commander, Brawl, any other format, and now it becomes something even bigger.
So I kind of like Robber the Rich for the red mythics. I like that one a little bit better.
Yeah,
I think that
I
one
do too. I like that card. It just. I think that's in time. I don't think Rogue is ready yet.
Well, not even necessarily just in Rogue, but just you look at its base stats, a 2/2 haste and with, I mean, reach is whatever, but 2/2 haste for 2 mana in red keeps you aggressive. So
yeah.
And it's synergized with the Embercleave. You slap the Embercleave on that, make it a 3/3 reach haste, double strike, trample.
Yeah. But I think the real value of him, I mean, it is a 2/2 reach for 2. Okay, fine. And haste and reach in red. First of all, good on Wizards to kind of take what things that we would expect. Like, we have a blank that does trample and haste. Or trample. Yeah, it's like haste and trample.
Trample,
like,
and haste, yeah.
You know, we have a red that's doing reach. We have, you know, like, they're playing around with our preconceptions as far as what the color wheel and the things you can do with it. And I'm glad they're doing that, because it could get stale otherwise. Mm-hmm. But I don't, like I said, this card is probably pretty good as far as impacting standard right away. I'm not sure. It needs a set of Rogue. It needs Rogue help. It's like Vampires right now. Vampires are dead after rotation.
I'm looking at just the cards that are in red that have been previewed so far. You've got your 1-drop in Fervent Champion. You got your 2-drop in Robber of the Rich. You've got your 3-drop in Bonecrusher Giant and or Ironcrag Pyromancer, depending on which direction you want to go. You got a 4-drop in Opportunistic Dragon or Torben Thane of Redfell.
Red has a ton of toys.
Red can curve out like crazy.
Yeah, red has a ton of toys. It's just where I look at the value of Robber the Rich is where you attack with a road, you can cast that the card you're exiling. That's the key thing. You really can't get that. Now, it's removal. don't get me wrong, it's removal, and I like that. It's also a red card that does removal, which is rare. Okay.
Well, and don't forget too that he's a rogue,
right?
So it doesn't matter how many rogues you have; just one of them needs to attack,
right?
So if he's the only one you have that's attacking, you can still use that ability. So, I mean, by himself, he generates a lot of value by exiling the top card of your opponent's library, being able to cast that card.
Right.
Granted.
Well, the problem is with him, I could see with Robert or the Rich, you it's a two drop. So turn two, you get him out. Bingo, I'm hitting you. I'm exiling the top card you've got. It's kind of like with, what the hell's the black one there that we see all the time? And it's like, oh, I got to deal with this right now or I'm dead. Thief of Sanity. Okay, I see Thief of Sanity. I'm like, I have to kill this now. All right, so turn two, this thing, if it's the only rogue out there and it exiles, it's gonna become a target. You still have to deal with it. Don't get me wrong. But, all right, so you're able to exile it. You're able to cast that card. But I guarantee you, usually on turn three, if they can curve out, they're going to have something sitting out there to block.
Yeah, but I mean, you drop this on turn two. It has haste. So at the very least, even if they kill it,
right,
you're still getting a card out of their library.
That's why I said it's still value for removal.
Yeah, it's just value.
Ember Cleave has a lot more upside to it than this card does.
Yeah.
I mean, because I think this card, Robber of the Rich, is 100% a placeholder card, a starting card to get us to rogues. I think next set they're going to introduce at least if they can introduce, what are there, 10 already? There's 10 rogues in the set. All right. If they can introduce five more, as long as they're in the colors that we have already, well, now you've got something to kind of build around where this card becomes the build around card, you know? Mm-hmm. The Rankle Master of Pranks is a fairy rogue.
Right.
Okay, so you're playing Rakdos. Okay, well, hey, that's good. Actually, looking at this, okay, other than green, so yeah, red, black, and blue are all rogue. They're mythics, I should say. The one of them is a rogue. The Brazen Borrower is a fairy rogue.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Grixis. Is that Grixis? Yeah.
That's Grixis.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, because Grixis didn't have enough toys. You rat bastards.
No, Grixis never really took off, though.
Yeah, it did for like a hot minute. And then
a minute.
So, I don't know. I mean, time's going to tell, obviously. There's no way to tell who won this combat. But,
we could all be completely wrong.
We could be, too. I mean, we've been wrong before. We really thought Wilderness Reclamation, somebody was going to find a use for that.
Well, actually... one of the quote unquote decks to watch post rotation is Team of Reclamation.
Yeah. And it is
going to be a thing. And, you know, Expansion Explosion and all that good stuff.
It's going to be a thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, with that, you know, I think we're at a good point here. We've got some stuff. I mean, I definitely next week want to talk about what we're losing to. I think with talking about things to play for pre-release, I definitely want to talk about the things that are rotating out that are really going to suck. Like, you know, losing vampires, losing things like that. Cause I mean, some of that, you know, RIP or whatever. Maybe I'll make a montage with Sarah McLachlan singing, "I Will Remember You" or something, but, but let's go ahead and get into it.
Main Fizz.
All right. Main the Fizz. Hold on. I have to get out of full screen on that.
Oh, geez.
Oh, geez, Rick. And, So main two. Well, first of all, we did kind of jump over one. We have a new Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
So congratulations and a hearty salute to Reed Duke, which is dying of not surprised for all of us. Reed Duke is now the latest Hall of Famer.
Yes.
He got in with something like 94% of the vote.
Yeah, it was kind of disgusting.
Which, you know, and the way they do it is a little different than a lot of other things. You know, you need 60% to get in. The problem is Reed Duke was 94% of the vote, which didn't leave enough. I mean, he was like 40 points ahead of everybody, or like 50 points ahead of everybody else.
But really, I mean, if you think about it, it makes sense.
It does. It really, really does. It's just, it's one of those like, oh, that kind of, imagine being that guy. You know, it's
you're like, one of those things though, where you're like, wait a minute, he wasn't already in the Hall of Fame? He wasn't like the only person in the Hall of Fame?
Because well, I forget what the qualifications are for Hall of Fame.
It's kind of arbitrary.
Yeah. Because it's like, you know, with like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it's like, you've had to do this for, you know, it's 20 years since your first like number one single or whatever, or what have you. But yeah. I mean, for this, it's like, what is it? 10 years since your first win? What? How does it work?
You have to have like a certain number of pro points or top finishes for a certain number of time. He's gone to every pro tour since he went pro in 2010.
And let's be honest, he's the name. He is 100%. If you ask any even casual Magic player, name a Magic player, name a pro Magic player, they're going to say Reid Duke.
Yep.
You know, almost immediately. It was the first name I learned when I got back. I was like, oh, wow. But BDM's still here.
Same with me. Reid Duke was one of the first names I learned upon coming back, even though I was like, oh, John Finkel and Kai Booty are still around. But he's also one of the nicest people you could meet from what I've heard.
He doesn't have an attitude.
He's like a class act. He's he's very gracious, very humble. And
how soon do you think he's on a card?
I'm surprised he's not on like four already.
You know, it's an interesting idea. Somebody brought this up on one of the podcasts I listened to, and I didn't think about it, but this could have gone horribly wrong. Is it Dixon who got the card?
Javier Dominguez.
Who?
Javier Dominguez.
Dominguez, that's it. But imagine if, say, Watanabe had won last year. It's like, I think it's kind of cool that you're doing this, but yeah, you better have a plan B. What if Javier Dominguez, you know, what if we find out like in 6 months that like, you know, he's been, you know, I don't know, any number of crazy things that we've heard about. It's like,
you never know.
It's really putting somebody's face on a Magic card is kind of, it's definitely different. So, well, you know, we've had some changes to this week as well. We like to talk about Arena in our second main. And so let's kind of break it down. They sent out another update 5 days ago. Thank you, Wizards. So basically, if you have listened to anything, including us, the whole world was in an uproar over what they were planning for Historic.
Yeah.
It screamed of cash grab. It screamed of they don't know what they're doing, or they know what they're doing and don't care. It was a whole lot of poopy being put right in your mouth. And, I don't think there was anybody who was like, well, I can understand why they're doing that. It was definitely horrible. And so Wizards listened, because that's what they do. This wasn't at all a chance for them to, you know, put something out there so that they can look like they listen. No. We actually listen, but we really don't. So they rolled it back a little bit. They put out a release. It was on September 13th, my sister's birthday, so Friday. And it basically said, okay, Wildcard Redemption. This is what they rolled back mainly. They said, we're going to no longer be changing wildcard redemption rates for rotated cards in November. Rotated cards, people, is the operative word. Redemption for all rotated cards will remain one for one. Okay, I'm in. For that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's one of those things you're like, you never should have even done it in the first
honestly,
place.
Again, I say they should be free. But I get it. Okay, one for one. We can live with that. Now, people are all like, yay, Historic's going to be one for one. They didn't say that. They said rotated is one for one.
The chart that I'm looking at says one for one Historic card.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Right now.
Obviously they can change it whenever they want.
Well, because the other thing that they've done is in the same chart, if you go down new historic cards, it was saying 15 or 20 cards added in November through a paid event. Now says TBD, to be determined.
Oops.
Which is, we are not putting cards out in November probably, because they would have to start coding now. So
there's still time to add sets, Wizards.
There is. I don't think they're going to.
No, they're not. They're not. That's my personal pipe dream.
Look, I get it. Okay, I get it. So let's talk about this too, because this is going to go right into my thought on this. The historic play queue. They were going to have an always-on historic play progresses daily and weekly wins and quests. What they took away from us for letting us redeem our wild cards for cards that have no value. Keep that in mind. That they are now saying always-on historic play only progresses your quests. It will not progress your weekly wins or. That is crap.
That's kind of a mulligan.
Yeah.
Honestly. Because, I mean, they have other events that don't progress your daily wins.
Right. I get it. It's what it is this. Okay. This all screams of one thing. Okay. And they also rolled back the whole, the only way to get any previously released packs. So like Ixalan and Rivals and all that before they said the only way to get those would be in a $49 bundle. So yeah, you have three quarters of the collection yourself already, but we're going to make you buy half a box. And that's everybody hit the roof on that. They're like, we're never going to buy that. We're going to have to use our wild cards. Well, now they're going to let you buy packs the same way you would anybody else. All the SKUs, which is a retail term, are going to be available.
Thank you, Wizards.
Yeah, thanks you again for absolutely nothing.
You were supposed to do in the first place.
You have done literally nothing. So here's what's happening. Okay, here's what I think is happening. Okay, they make their money on Standard in both paper and in Arena.
Understandable.
And Arena is to at least right now, I think Arena was originally designed to supplement paper, much the way Duels was at Duel of the Planeswalkers, et cetera, et cetera. It was designed to supplement paper. Now, we've all been kind of worried about Arena supplanting paper, like taking it over, and paper being used to feed Arena. And I think they want to leave that option open. But as it stands right now, they want us to spend our time playing Standard. This could break and kill Arena because they've been remarkably lucky or very good. And I will give them credit for that. We will see after rotation, but they have been remarkably lucky these last two sets or this last year. Okay. Once they rotated out Hazoret Red. Okay. To where people wanted to play Standard ever since guilds came into being. Mm-hmm. You had an amazing run of Standard for the last year, which is really where Arena took off.
Yeah.
Now, what if, all right, and again, it's hard for us to maybe remember what Standard was like pre-Guilds of Ravnica, but I do remember it. What if this Throne of Eldraine doesn't have that effect yet? And what if Standard becomes, you're either going to play Mono Red, or you're going to play Esper Control, and that's it. Or something to that effect. What if only two decks come up, or Tamer Reclamation and Guild Gates? Because right now, playing the Core 2020 event, Guild Gate is ridiculously good.
Gates are really good.
Yeah, like I've been rolling through that. I mean, I already have everything I needed. Again, I was at 100 already. But every once in a while, if I want to smack somebody around, I just roll into Gates for fun. But
by the way, they changed that too. But that's
did they? Well, what do you mean?
Well, I can add that real quick at the end. Change how that whole thing works.
But the whole point of, all right, so you've been lucky, and then so people have wanted to play Standard on Arena because Standard was so diverse and so well done. If we end up in a Standard season where it's crap, what happens to Arena? Because you're pushing us all to play Standard, people are going to go, why would I play Arena? I'm going to go play MTGO, or I'm going to go to the store, or I'm going to go play freaking Fortnite. Like, this is not a viable, this is not a good idea. I think what they should have done with Historic was use this as an opportunity to safeguard their, to hedge their bets. If we have a bad Standard season, letting people go in and play Historic is good. Like, what do you think?
I agree with most of your points. I mean, a lot of arena success has been based on the fact that we've had a great standard, metagame. It's been very balanced. It's been, you know, new decks emerging pretty much every other week to challenge the current King of the Hill, and the mana base has been perfect, and rotation's coming. We're losing check lands. So, you know, it's not going to be quite as easy to play your three or four color deck nonsense that you would before. So we'll have to see how, you know, the new standard looks. I mean, I'm optimistic because they've been knocking it out of the park, and I have no reason to think they're going to stop now. But I still have a lot of issues with the way they're doing historic. So yeah. I'm really hoping that there's more changes coming down the pike, like, you know, old sets instead of just, oh, here's some random powerful cards that are going to warp the meta. But along those lines, I was mentioning they changed the Core 2020 event.
Okay.
This is a real quick thing because we're actually already over.
Yeah, I realize that.
So before it was, you get to two wins in a row, you get 200 XP. If you lose a game, you're done. You have to restart.
Right.
They've changed it now to where you have up to two losses you can get. You get up to three wins. If you get one win, you get 50 XP. If you get two wins, you get 150 XP. If you get three wins, you get 250 XP.
Oh, wow, that's good.
And now you have two losses to get.
In other words, people were still griping and complaining that they weren't.
I didn't like it because, like, okay, especially with the fact that you had to always exit and re-enter that part of the menu every time.
Yeah.
Play a game, lose, okay, exit, enter, pick your deck, play. Lose a game, exit, enter, pick your deck, play. Now at least you have two losses before you have to do that whole nonsense. And you can win, if you win three games in a row, or even if you go 3-1, you still get 250 XP.
Right. And I totally agree. And again, I already have my XP. I'm at 100. I play it just to kind of also kind of start to see where things are kind of moving and see if there's any like I'm actually watching. I don't mind losing because I'm like, okay, what interactions are working here? Like, okay, Risen Reef is still a thing, but it's not as powerful as we thought without some of the cards that they're losing. Simic Flash might be a thing after Throne of Eldraine comes in, but but without the stuff in there now, without Merfolk branch, you know, without the Merfolk there that comes in and all that, it's hurting. So it's interesting for that, but historic should be a viable alternative in arena for a bad season or for the end of a season. Like, I haven't played as much arena right now either because it's the end of standard and I've got my 100, you know, XP. I'm at a level 100. I go in, I do my daily quests and I get my coins and that's it. And I'm done because why play anymore? I've got, you know.
I think.
Huh?
I'm at 90, so I'm going to be cutting it close. I'm not sure I'm going to make it.
I mean, for me, it's nice to, you know, but even laddering up, like, it's almost the point now the ladder system is kind of also broken in that, you know what, but by pushing me down to silver every time from platinum, there's almost, and so you're only pushing mythics down into platinum. I'm not really getting, you know, I'm really, unless I could sit there and grind for 20 hours a week, you know, I'm not going to get into to higher tiers because, you know, these guys are already so far ahead. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not complaining. It is what it is. And I'm cool with that. But, you know, that being said, I think arena should be using historic again as an alternative, but who knows? I really want to get into this email because Jamie did write. So we're going to go a little over this week and, you know, don't kill us, everybody. But he did write and ask a question, and we love the Ask Aramis prayers. And again, it's more my question. So, you know, we like that. So real quick, Jamie wrote us back. He was the gentleman who wrote a few weeks ago about the red deck.
Okay.
He said, hey, and he calls me William, which is kind of funny. So I'm kind of giggling. He says, I'm ready to ask your opinion on Helm of the Host from Dominaria in the Naya EDH precon deck, which is the commander deck he's talking about. I'm pretty sure this is go infinite with infinite creatures created and attacking, since I believe populate works as a May ability. You have a 2-card combo. Okay, sort of, but it's actually better than you think. yes, you can go infinite. But unless you have a card that says every time you populate again, you know, every time you know, token is created, you populate, it doesn't go infinite, but what it does is it lets you go wide faster. So, again, it's a commander thing. Y'all should look up the Naya commander, but it's a great deck. I'm having a blast with it. But I did put Helm of the Host in there, and because I actually also put in a few other cards, like, here, you want to know what a card for that deck? Anointed Procession.
Yeah.
Get Anointed Procession. It is cheap. And if you can, Crested Sunmare. Also a great card for that deck. Panharmonicon and something of the Crucible there that comes, or Assault of the, or Court of the Council or something. But basically that says, you know, your opponent's creatures come in tapped and you gain a life when a creature enters. Those are all really, really, it's a good combo that also plays well with the commander. So I just wanted to answer that. You know, he also he forgot to end that he added the War of the Spark Chandra in his red deck as well. He hopes we get well soon. So thank you, Jamie. We love hearing from you guys. But yeah, that he's talking a little bit more about Commander, and we want to encourage you guys, if you have questions about Commander or Modern or Brawl, email us. You don't have to just talk about Standard. We are going to focus here on Standard, but like with Historic, that impacts Standard in a way because it's impacting Arena. So don't hesitate to email us. Any thoughts on that, by the way, Aramis, about the Commander? I know you haven't played that Commander yet.
I was reading it just now. And with the Helm of the Host, yeah, I mean, it's not infinite, but it's almost like exponential. So yeah.
I wouldn't put the Helm of the Host on the Commander very often. I actually tend to put him on the things around him.
Yeah, I mean, it works great with him. Yeah. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, but I mean, if I can, well, here's the thing. What I do is, my goal with Helm of the Host is if I can get Shalai out and put Helm of the Host on her, now I'm hexproof all the way around. And you got a harder time on nailing me.
Yeah,
like that's what I mean. It's like, so look through your deck. And again, Shalai is a card I added. But there are so many great little combos in that deck. There's that artifact that lets you exile a card. That is amazing for Angel of Sanctions or Crested Sunmare. Because if you can, I did it to Crested Sunmare. And the second time I got a Crested Sunmare out, I'm like, now all my horses are indestructible and y'all are dead. So... because what it does is it exiles it, and then you can pay the mana cost to cast a token of it. Mm-hmm. So the tokens will create other tokens, and then I had Anointed Procession out, so things started going bonkers. Yeah, you're going to do a lot of math with Anointed Procession, by the way. So with that, we should probably, because we are running over. End step. Okay, sorry for running over, guys. Again, it's a week before pre-release, but both Aramis and I, while we're picking up our cards here and putting the table back together and getting ready to go home, Aramis and I stream Arena on the Planeswalkers podcast channel on Twitch. He actually does it a little more than me these days. So look up Planeswalkers podcast, and you can also follow me on Twitch at Mindcrime73.
You can also follow me on Twitch at RMECWRX. I was hoping to stream tonight, probably won't have time tonight, so I might not stream until next Wednesday. It's looking like Wednesday nights might be the best time for me to do it. If I can get in more than one night a week, I'll do that. But usually Wednesday nights around 8:30, I'll probably go on for like an hour or so. But RMECWRX on Twitch. Again, I link to the Planeswalker podcast channel on Twitch as well. So whenever I'm on, I'll be on there as well. If Twitter is more your speed, you can find our show at PlanesTalkerPod on Twitter. For the most part, we'll do like, you know, if we're not recording, we'll try to post something. Or if we've posted an episode, we'll let you know. Or if something in the community happens we want to let you know about right away, that's when we'll fire out a tweet. Or if we're at a tournament,
yeah,
we'll be tweeting during that.
Yeah, so maybe we might tweet a little bit while we're at pre-release next week. My personal Twitter is at WR Benson. It doesn't get a lot. I do as much as I can, but I tend to go on there to read other people's tweets. I know I'm horrible. But listen, I'm in my 40s. You think I know this social media thing, really? If somebody wants to come along and be our social media director for the site and and the key here is you will work for free. Let us know. We'd love to have you. But you can go there. You can also look us up on Facebook. That's where the live show is. Ricky just actually left. He wished us a good evening. Just look up Planeswalker podcast there. If you're listening to the audio recording, you're like, gosh, why are they talking about the cards on the screen? I can't see it. That's where you're going to have to go to see it. All right. But we'd love to have it. You know, please check in there.
Finally, you can send us emails like we got one today to ask us for advice on our Ask Aramis section, where I am or Benson.
Yeah.
Offer you tips on anything from deck construction to limited choices. We'll be doing basically a sort of like an expanded version of that next week when we talk about the pre-release.
Yeah.
But if you want to fire us an email to ask a question or even just to let us know how we're doing with the show, if you have any suggestions about maybe a future topic for a show, Our address is podcast@planestalkerspodcast.com.
And as always, we really would cherish your iTunes reviews or Google Store, anywhere you can put a review for the show. It would be great. It does help. Anything that can get eyes on the show, feel free to share us across social media. But for Aramis Perez, I am Will Benson. We want to thank you guys for listening tonight. We will be recording hopefully next Monday as normal, as long as we can stay healthy. But yeah, right. For Aramis Perez, this is Will Benson. As I said, thank you again for listening. We will see you next week. And as always, remember to save some of your land on tap because you never know when you'll need it. Take care.